Remembrance Day is tomorrow, marking the anniversary of the end of the First War. It is a time to pause, reflect and commemorate and thank soldiers who've fought in wars. South Australian Ken Duthie is a Vietnam veteran from a long line of military men. He uses his collection of uniforms to help children understand the sacrifice of soldiers. He joins me now for a chat ahead of a Callington Primary School talk. Hi, Ken.
Good morning, Jenny. How is this fine morning?
Yeah, really well, thank you. You doing all right?
I am at that, always.
Now, Ken, you reach out to thousands of children with your travelling military show, and I hear it really gets through to the kids. Can you tell us about this and the power of show and tell in getting messages across?
The beauty of the show and tell with the uniforms is that not only do the children get to see the uniforms, they get to handle the medals with white gloves, they get to handle the swords, and also, at times, try on the uniforms of the Army, Navy, Air Force. It makes it more participatory and they feel really relaxed. They become a part of the ownership of the uniform.
Oh, wow. And there's a really important magnetic thing about having symbols, isn't there,
in
getting across a message.
So. We tend to forget that down the track, these children are going to become the guardians of the ANZAC history because we may not be around. But if they understand what it has created to give them what they have, it makes it all the better in the future for them as leaders.
Hmm. Now, Ken, you've never advertised this work that you do, but you're very busy with it. You started your talks 20 years ago in Burnside and it's absolutely grown since then, hasn't it?
It most definitely has. It started off with one classroom at a reception in 2000, and from that point, as teachers left their school and were posted into other schools, they invited me in. And they believed that the message that I was giving was not about war, it was about the prevention of war and how these children as leaders of tomorrow have to look at how they are going to stop war, not fight war.
Can you tell us an example of that? What pieces are in your collection that you use to discuss things like that?
I have swords from World War I and World War II. I have a King George V sword, 110 years old. We have a 75-year-old Japanese sword that was captured at Kokoda. The children get to see them, as I say, and hold them under, of course, the direction of the school staff. They are able to look at a German uniform. We've got one which is from the Hitler Youth Movement.
Oh, wow.
Children from about the age of 13 to 18 that Hitler put into uniforms. And sadly, a lot of those children didn't survive. But we have those uniforms from the lookout. We have a uniform from Buckingham Palace, from the Coldstream Guards. With they call it a busby. It's not, it's a bearskin, so we've got to make sure we get the right terminology. So they're able to touch, feel, and all the Australian uniforms from World War I right through to today.
Wow. And you joined the war as a very young lad, didn't you?
I was 17 when I enlisted in the Army, and I had only just turned 19 when we were deployed to Vietnam, and I was deployed, in fact, with my brother. We should never have been in the same unit, but we were. Different companies, same battalion. And our unit was from South Australia at Woodside. Yeah, it's.
And when you say you shouldn't have been deployed together, did he die in the war?
No, no. Fortunately, he didn't, but we're in the same battle. We're in a fire support base. He was inside. The mortars were coming in. One went off behind him and took out a good piece of his back. I was outside the perimeter when the attack was coming in and they ran over the top of us. But we saw where they were firing the mortars from and we sent word back, of course, by radio, telling him where the mortars were. And the next morning I returned to the base, was called up, told my brother had been wounded. I went back to my pit, which no longer existed because a mortar had blown them up. So I was very fortunate. So my pack that I'd left there no longer existed.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. Fortunately and unfortunately, I was outside the perimeter.
Jeez. And how long did you serve for, Ken?
I served for 20 years and people ask me, if I was the same age, would I do the same thing again? Of course, because it gave me a lifestyle and a direction and disciplines that I otherwise may never have had.
Mm.
And I think that is important. We tend to have a crack at the youth of today and how they seem to be so undisciplined. Yet if you look at the Anzac Day marches that we have of today, it's the kids that are leading the parents to the Anzac Day marches. Now, That's not undisciplined. That is discipline to me, because they're seeing what could be, not what is. So they are our future. And without them, we don't have a future.
And also, it sounds as though you're not afraid of realism and talking about the power and awful elements of war, which perhaps didn't really happen for you before you went into it, right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
But we have to open their eyes to the fact that 100,000 people from World War One to today have lost their lives, men and women from the Army, Navy and Air Force. And we tend to forget that for every one person that dies, approximately 100 people mourn them, you know, brothers and sisters, mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, children, nieces, nephews and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the first part. So we have to look at the effect outside of war to the effect it has at home to everybody else.
And you've brought a piece of rosemary for me that's been propagated. This is a really important little piece of rosemary, isn't it, Ken?
It most definitely is. It's propagated from a rosemary bush that was cutting that was brought back by a wounded soldier from Gallipoli in 1915. And today we are able to give the, I give these out to the school so that they can actually grow them and plant them within the schoolyard.
Oh.
And we don't just give them one. Generally, we look at, say, three classes of year fours, and we teach all of them to have their own little pot to grow this, and then they plant it, and they make an Anzac circle.
Oh, great. And after 20 years in war, what was it like coming back? It must have been a very different society to step back into.
I nearly cried, to be honest, because I had been doing this since the age of 17, and I got out at the age of 38, and to step back into a new life. So I had to restructure, but I was very clever. I found out where there was a few of the other ex-servicemen working, and I went and joined them. So we had like things to talk about until such time as I established where I wanted to be. And eventually I finished up working for football clubs in management, and that suited me. I had still some form of control of doing things, and that worked out really well for me.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. And society as a whole was quite different as well, wasn't it?
And very much.
And women's roles and
yes.
Lots of changes.
Well, one of the biggest things that I actually taught within my program was women in service, how things had changed, where everyone thought that the 70s, the burning with the bra, and that was the women's movement. That's not the case. It actually commenced in 1939 women came into the workforce to replace the men who were going to war.
Of course.
At the end of the war, they asked the men to go back to their jobs, and the women said, hey, hang on, I'm not going back to being just the ordinary old housewife. I have now proven that I can do my job as well as you. You take it off me.
Mm.
And that was the beauty of it, that women had actually found a step forward and a place where they could now say, look at us.
Yeah.
And I teach that as part of my program.
So oh, that's wonderful. What else is important to you to impart on children when teaching them about war?
I think they've got to learn that, firstly, war is not good. War creates orphans. It takes away the rights of those children in those countries where war is fought. It takes away the security of a home, of food, of clothing, of parents, of education. And the strongest element we have is education. And I refer mostly to a young girl called Malala Yousafzai, the young lass who was actually shot in the head by the Taliban when she was travelling home from school on the school bus.
Because she dared to speak out and want education for her fellow women.
She did so. Mm. And the beauty of it is the girls in her village in Pakistan now have the right to go to school, something that a lot of girls in Afghanistan and all will never ever see. They'll never see a school in their life.
Mm.
And that's so sad, because the power of education through these children becoming the ones that will be able to talk to each other to create a better world and a better society won't happen.
And her power of sacrifice as well.
Very much so. But she is the only young lady at the age, I think she was 13 or 14, who addressed the United Nations about what had happened to her and why she did it and why these people were so afraid of her. The men were afraid to lose their power, the Taliban.
Mm.
They had the power of a pistol. She had the power of the word and education.
Yeah.
A very big thing.
And it goes to show that, you know, while no war is good, sacrifices have to be made, and you've got to stand up for the values of society.
Very much so. Mm. And she stood by her convictions.
Yep.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see her go back to Pakistan one day and become a leader. I hope she does, because it's so... We've seen it today with the elections in America.
Mm.
A woman now, the vice president. There's nothing to stop her down the track becoming the president. And it will happen. We've seen it happen in Australia. Julia Gillard.
Well, thank you for your service, and for not only that, but also really positively helping educate the community and educate young people about the sacrifices and significance of war. Thanks, Ken.
You are more than welcome, and may your day be filled with sunshine, and thank you again.